This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.
Welcome to The Indignant Muse, where we reimagine Ireland's revolutionary past through song and poem. My name is Terry Moylan, and I will be your guide in this special weekly series broadcasting for the next few months on Near FM. This radio series is adapted from the book I edited in 2016, The Indignant Muse, Poetry and Songs of the Irish Revolution, 1887 to 1926, published by the Lilliput Press. It is a collection of poems, ballads and songs from a range of well-known and not-so-well-known poets, songsters and balladeers. The book is arranged chronologically from 1887 right up to 1926, and our radio series will follow a similar pattern. To help us bring the songs and poems to life, we're delighted to be joined by members of Ungoliin Traditional Singing Club. I hope you will join me over the next few months as we travel together on the journey of Irish historical discovery. We begin our journey of discovery in a programme called The Gathering Storm. We'll feature poems by Arthur M. Forrester and a Reverend Dempsey, and songs written by Edward Fitzwilliam, Arthur Griffith and George Curtin. To help us bring the songs and poems to life, we will hear interpretations from Ungoliin members Barry Gleason, Derry Farrell, Sean O'Harcoin and Manus O'Riordan. In the 1890s, opposition to Britain's African adventures was widespread in Ireland, with campaigners and newspapers drawing explicit parallels between British treatment of peoples such as the Zulus in southern Africa and British treatment of the Irish. In this poem, Served Him Right, written by Arthur Forrester, who also wrote the well-known Felons of Our Land, the speaker expresses her disgust at her brother, who has been killed fighting the forces of the Mahdi in Sudan. It's going to be read now by Manus O'Riordan.
I have no tears for brother Pat, though stark he lies and stiff and gory, on the Egyptian desert that he might assist in England's glory. The foes he fought were not his own, nor his the tyrant's cause he aided. Then why should I his fate bemoan, O brother faithless and degraded? He saw how Saxon laws at home had crushed his sires and banned his brothers. Why should he cross the ocean's foam to place that hated yoke on others? The Arabs slew him in a fight, for all by brave and free men cherished, aye, for the cause of truth and right, for which his kit and kin had perished. No Arab chief in 98 placed foot on Erin's shore as foeman. They lent no spears to swell the hate of Hessian hound and orange yeoman. But those who wrapped our homes in flame and trod us down like dumb brute cattle, it was for them, oh burning shame, my brother gave his life in battle. Sure every memory of late must from his wretched heart have vanished, our hills and valleys desolate, our ruined homes, our people banished. And yet God knows he learned in youth the gloomy story of his sireland, drank in at mother's knees the truth that England is the scourge of Ireland. I cannot weep for brother Pat. I hate the hellish cause he died for, false traitor to the freedom that his brother strove, his sister sighed for. E'en when in tearful dreams I see the parching sands drift blood-stained o'er him, my grief is changed to anger. He was treacherous to the land that bore him.
Thanks for that, Manus. That's a poem written by Arthur Forrester, the man who wrote The Felons of Our Land, and he has a note to the poem in his collection. An Irish girl, hearing that her brother Pat has been killed in the Royal Irish, fighting against the Mahdi, said, "It served Pat right. He had no business going out to fight those poor creatures, the Arabs. May God strengthen the Mahdi." How did the poem strike you when you first read it?
Well, I never read it until I saw it in your book, so it struck me as blunt and to the point. there was a relation of my own, of my maternal grandfather's first cousin, who was killed on what was still the Somme front in 1918. But his sister in particular, Maureen Ihig, deplored the fact that he had been killed in the wrong army. And she wept more for that than weeping on his death. So it's not a sentiment unknown to me, but it also typifies the Fenian ballad song that sometimes attributed to Jeremiah O'Donovan Rossa, "No sin to kill for English greed in some far foreign clime. How can it be that patriot love in Ireland is a crime?" So those sentiments gel well together.
That's right. I lived on the South Circular Road for years, and streets named me were called Wolseley Street and Dufferin Avenue. And it's only recently I discovered that these were named after English imperial adventurers in Africa. And that memory of Irish involvement in the struggle for Africa vanished after the Rising. It was kind of written out of our history, I think.
And I mean, one of the Parnell's closest associates in Parliament, James G. Kelly, he actually was involved in lending support to the Mahdi rebellion. So there was an Irish connection supporting the rebellion as well.
I never knew that. Yeah. It's good to hear. Thanks very much, Myles.
You're welcome.
Derry Farrell is now going to sing the latest version of the Seán Bhean Bhocht. Also titled Queen Victoria's Recruiting Trip to Ireland, this song was inspired by the visit made by Victoria in 1900, which was widely believed to be for the purpose of encouraging recruitment to the British Army, which was not at the time having the best time of it in the Boer War in South Africa. She created a new unit of the army, the Irish Guards, and in a grand gesture granted them the privilege of wearing shamrock in their caps on St. Patrick's Day. Observers did not fail to remark how ironic this was, given that the wearing of green had once been perceived as a gesture of rebellion rather than loyalty. In this song, Victoria is tagged with the nickname the Famine Queen, an expression coined by Maud Gonne, and she is berated for inaction during the famine of the 1840s. The reference to the London Times recalls the occasion during the famine when the Times gloated, "Soon a Celt will be as rare on the banks of the Liffey as a red man on the banks of the Hudson."
"You have heard of old Queen Vic," says the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "Our lake keepers make me sick," send the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "In her war against the Boer, Irish fools had suffered sore. Then she came to get some more," send the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "Then she came to get some more," send the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "'Twas a shameful sight to see," says the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "After all she's done to me," says the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "In no land beneath the sun has such heartless things been done since her cruel reign begun," says the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "Since her cruel reign begun," says the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "Away back in 45, says the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "It's no wonder I'm alive," says the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "I had most 2 million sons fit to march and shoulder guns, but from home they had to run," said the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "But from home they had to run," said the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "In 47 and 48, said the Seán Bhean Bhocht, "England made a famine great," said the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "She took off her oats and weight, our sweet butter, eggs and mate, and left us little we could eat," said the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "And left us little we could eat," said the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "Vic did not come then nor send," said the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "As a ruler or a friend," said the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "Hunger, sickness and despair, you could feel them in the air, but one rap she did not care," said the Seán Bhean Bhocht. "But one rap she did not care," said the Seán Bhean Bhocht. When the filthy London Times send the Shan Van Vocht, adding to its other crimes, send the Shan Van Vocht. Bragged how Irish ran away with a vengeance day by day, and prayed that they long might stay, send the Shan Van Vocht. And prayed that they long might stay, send the Shan Van Vocht. This same heartless British queen, send the Shan Van Vocht, though then young was just as mean, send the Shan Van Vocht. She once never raised a hand but to send an armed band to evict them from their land, send the Shan Van Vocht. To evict them from their land, send the Shan Van Vocht. So for over 50 years, said the Shan Van Vocht, I have scarcely dried my tears, said the Shan Van Vocht. All those years they drove away my brave sons across the say, but they want them bad today, send the Shan Van Vocht. But they want them bad today, send the Shan Van Vocht. When the grand heroic boar send the Shan Van Vocht, frightened England to the core, send the Shan Van Vocht. They all with their famine queen wore the outlawed Irish green. 'Twas the queerest sight I've seen, says the Shan Van Vocht. 'Twas the queerest sight I've seen, says the Shan Van Vocht. 'Twas cheap blarney, nothing more, says the Shan Van Vocht, to get men to fight the boar, says the Shan Van Vocht. But although she lost her shame, my young men saw through her game, and she went back as she came, says the Shan Van Vocht. And she went back as she came, says the Shan Van Vocht. There is freedom in the air, says the Shan Van Vocht. England wallows in despair, says the Shan Van Vocht. Though my sons are much reduced, Irish chicks come home to roost. They'll give freedom yet a boost, says the Shan Van Vocht. They'll give freedom yet a boost, says the Shan Van Vocht.
The Battle of Dundee, also known as the Battle of Tallaght and the Battle of Glencoe, was the first engagement of the Second Boer War and took place on the 20th of October 1899. The Royal Dublin Fusiliers and the Royal Irish Fusiliers took part in the battle, in which the British forces suffered casualties of 851 killed, wounded, captured or missing, including their leader General Simmons. Losses on the Boer side amounted to 109. The Boer forces are believed to have included Irish volunteers, which led to the following poem being written and published 5 months later in the San Francisco Call.
On the mountain side the battle raged. There was no stop or stay. Macklin captured Private Burke and Ensign Michael Shea. Fitzgerald got Fitzpatrick. Brannigan frowned O'Rourke. Finnegan took a man named Lynch and a couple of lads from Cork. Sudden they heard Martin cry, "Hands up or I'll run you through." He thought he had a Yorkshire boy, but 'twas Corporal Donoghue. McGarry took O'Leary, O'Connell took McNamee. That's how the English fought the Dutch at the Battle of Dundee. Then someone brought in Casey, O'Connor took O'Neill. Riley captured Kavanagh while trying to make a steal. Hogan caught McFadden, Corrigan found McBride, and Brennan made a handsome touch when Kelly tried to slide. Dacey took a lad named Walsh, Dooley got McGurk. Gilligan turned in Fahy's boy, for his father he used to work. They had marched to fight the English, but Irish was all they could see. That's how the English fought the Dutch at the Battle of Dundee. Spillane then took O'Madigan, Shanahan took McGee. While chasing Jerry Donovan, Clancy got shot in the knee. He cursed the Queen's whole army, he cursed the English race. then found the man who fired the shot. 'Twas a cousin, Martin Grace. Then McGuinness caught an AOH who came from Limerick town, but Sullivan got an orange man from somewhere in County Down. Hennessy took O'Hara, Hennigan took McPhee. That's how the English fought the Dutch at the Battle of Dundee. The sun was sinking slowly, the battle rolled along. The man that Murphy handed in was a cousin of Maud Gonne. Then Flanagan dropped his rifle, shook hands with Bill Maguire, for both had carried a piece of turf to light the schoolroom fire. Then Rafferty took in Flaherty, O'Connell got Major Magoo, O'Keefe got hold of Sergeant Joyce, and a Belfast lad or two. Some swore that old man Kruger had come to see the fun, but the man they thought was Uncle Paul was a Galway man named Dunn. Though war may have worse horrors, 'twas a frightful sight to see the way the English fought the Dutch at the Battle of Dundee. Just when the sound of firing in the distance fainter grew, Ryan caught McCluskey and orderly Donegan too. O'Toole he found McCarty, O'Mahony got Malone, and Duffy got a pair of lads from Connacht near Athlone. Then Dineen took O'Hagan, Phelan got Kehoe, Dempsey captured Callaghan, but Gallagher let him go. You'd have thought the Belfast chicken had tackled the Dublin flea the way the English fought the Dutch at the Battle of Dundee. Then powers began to intervene, the Waterford powers, I mean, and took a lad named Keenan and a captain named Mulqueen. Then Brady captured Noonan, Marr got McIldoo, McGovern got O'Hanlon, and Colonel McLaughlin too. 'Twas nigh the hour of sunset, the battle was nearly o'er, when McCormack came with Houlihan and Lieutenant Roger Moore. But 'twas a great day for Ireland, as you can easily see. That's how the English fought the Dutch at the Battle of Dundee. They marched them all to Kruger's town for supper and a bed. O'Halloran was the rear guard, the way McNulty led. When they got them to the racecourse, the Boers were full of glee, while Kruger never expected so English for to see. They told him they were Irish. It puzzled the old man's head, for the Irish he had seen in green, while these were togged in red. But 'tis a passing story, on history's page you'll see, that 'twas the English fought the Dutch at the Battle of Dundee.
This piece, Sean, The Battle of Dundee, I found it online in the online version of an American newspaper, and it was written about a famous battle that took place during the Boer War, and it's about the English fighting the Dutch, but that's not how it really was. Maybe you'd tell us how it really was.
Yeah. Well, it's about in the Boer War, you had the British Army fighting the Boers, who were essentially of Dutch origin. They were the Dutch farmers who had settled in South Africa and wanted to form an independent republic, or in republics actually plural. But one of them was the Transvaal, one of the biggest battles was called the Battle of Dundee, and in that battle, you had Irish men fighting Irish men, because a lot of Irish went out to fight with the Boers, volunteered. Now, a huge number as well were there because they were part of the British Army. And you had a couple of very famous regiments, the most notable being the Dublin Fusiliers, were involved in this battle. And it mirrored the division in Ireland at the time, where you had a nationalistic element, but you also had a very much pro-empire element. And up until the Rising, and indeed up until the executions of the Rising, the vast majority of the sentiment would have been pro-empire, pro-British. But the Rising and the executions in the 1916 Rising, of course, changed all that. But this is a very clever piece of verse put together by an Irish priest who was living in San Francisco. And he got to hear about the reports in probably in the newspapers. There was no internet around the year 1900. He put this verse, this poem together. It's, I think, extremely witty. And I have seen references to it, but not the full text myself, by various commentators, remarking on its ingenuity. How accurate it was in many ways.
T.D. Sullivan's Song from the Backwoods was immensely popular in early 20th century Ireland, and the air was used for several other songs, including this one by Arthur Griffith. It refers to the Irish volunteers commanded by John McBride, who fought for the Boers against Britain in the South African Wars of 1899 to 1902, often finding themselves fighting against Irish units of the British Army. Griffith, who worked as a journalist in South Africa, imagines the Irish fighters carrying on what would now be called a proxy war against the British Empire. And now Barry Gleeson is going to sing the song of the Transvaal Irish Brigade.
The cross swings low, the morn is near, now comrades fill up high. The cannon's voice will ring out clear when morning lights the sky. A toast we'll drink together, boys, ere dawns the battle's grey. A toast to Ireland, dear old Ireland, Ireland far away. Ireland far away, Ireland far away. Health to Ireland, strength to Ireland, Ireland boys hooray. Who told us that her cause was dead, who bade us bend the knee? The slaves again she lifts her head, again she dares be free. With gun in hand we take our stand for Ireland in the fray. We fight for Ireland, dear old Ireland, Ireland far away. Ireland far away, Ireland far away. We fight for Ireland, die for Ireland, Ireland boys, hooray. O mother of the wounded breast, O mother of the tears, the sons you loved and trusted best have grasped their battle spears. From Shannon, Lagan, Liffey, on Afric's soil today, we strike for Ireland, brave old Ireland, Ireland far away. Ireland far away, Ireland far away. We smite for Ireland, brave old Ireland, Ireland boys, hooray. The morning breaks, the bugle calls, now comrades for the fight. A hero's grave be his who falls, there comes again the night. For freedom's flag, for Ireland's cause, thrice out and swift today. Hooray for Ireland, brave old Ireland, Ireland far away. Ireland far away, Ireland far away. God guard old Ireland, dear old Ireland, Ireland far away.
The Song of the Transvaal Irish Brigade, written by Arthur Griffith, who was out in South Africa at the time of the Boer War. And maybe you'd tell me what you think about it.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting bit. It's obviously written to the same air as Song from the Backwoods that T.D. Sullivan wrote, Ireland Boys Hooray. Good. I think he might have been better off if he didn't have each chorus different. I know in Song from the Backwoods, each chorus is different, but it sort of repeats the last line of each verse. Now, that's hard enough for the audience to follow along and join in. But in this one, I think Griffith would have been better advised maybe if he just simplified the chorus. That, apart from that, it's excellent. You know, it is inspiring.
That's great. I always love to hear singers' view of the way a song is made as apart from the content of the song. So it's very interesting to hear that. Thanks very much, Barry. The wars in South Africa are forgotten now, and the deep Irish involvement in them is overshadowed by the events of the Rising. But before that, they were a live issue throughout Ireland and were commented on and written about. And this song just reflects the fact that adventures in South Africa were at the top of people's consciousness at the time and were a topic of conversation. A comic song was written by George Curtin about a man from County Cork who imagined he had gone out to Pretoria and come back again, or wished to convince his hearers that this had been the case. and all the adventures that occur to him in this imaginary trip. The Man Who Came Home from Pretoria, sung for us now by Oni Mikey O'Thulwan.
Although I have travelled far over the seas, my clothes they are tattered and flowing in the breeze, and they got me entangled in brambles and trees on my way coming home from Pretoria. I thought in my heart when I was going away that I'd strike some fine job and get wonderful pay. But alas, it is harder to act than to say, said the man coming home from Pretoria. The long hours in ambush whilst dodging the boars, in anguish we languish while patching our sores. Sure, three of those men were a match for 80 of the English force in Pretoria. I worked like a bugger to come back again on board an old lugger mid torrents of rain, and the roar of the surges near drove me insane, said the man coming home from Pretoria. After 40 days sailing, we came to Dundalk. My limbs, they were aching, I scarcely could walk, and the peelers, they gazed with the eye of a hawk on the man coming home from Pretoria. There was one with a squint, he insisted to know my name and my way of existing also, and he said, you've the gimp and identical go of a man coming home from Pretoria. And besides, you've no visible means of support, your movements are strange since you came into port, and I'll have you detained to explain it in court why you're tramping it home from Pretoria. I was then marched away like a horse going to pound, with two other stragglers strapped and well bound. Sure, I'd rather be swallowed red hot through the ground or shot by the boars in Pretoria. I'll tell you where was it they locked me that night. 'Twas a dreary stone closet set out from the light, where the bugs and battalions were having a fight for the man coming home from Pretoria. It was early next morning, a Rabon J.P. suggested the laugher to stop hounding me, and he said, there's no harm at all that I see in this man coming home from Pretoria. Now I'm back in Stikeen with my friends in the fall. 'Tis the neatest of places that ever you saw, and the sportiest spot from old Coombe to Googan. There I'll sleep till my whiskers are hoary.
Thank you for listening to Programme 1 of The Indignant Muse, The Gathering Storm. I hope this programme has given you a taste of the type of song, poem and ballad that was being written back in the late 19th century, inspired by Ireland's political and rebellious climate of the time. Please join us next time for the second programme in our series entitled The Rise of Nationalism and the Volunteer Movement. We'll feature songs and poems by Brian O'Higgins, Peter Golden and Maeve Kavanagh, with interpretations from Barry Gleason, Derry Farrell, Fergus Russell and Maureen Cronin.
This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee.